诸佛正法先生三宝尊，从今直至菩提永归，不以所修适当诸自量，为利有情，故愿大觉成。诸佛正法先生三宝尊，从今直至菩提永归，不以所修适当诸自量，为利有情，故愿大觉成。诸佛正法先生三宝尊，从今直至菩提永归，我以所修适当诸自量，为利有情，故愿大觉成。今天呢，我们稍稍的就是说，佛的那主要的圣地，因为之前我们因为有一次，上一次我去那个菩提迦耶的时候，给大家介绍过一些部分，就是有东南西北各个方向的一些介绍。但是可能今天，因为如果大家很方便的话，也可以有一些那些就是很直观的，因为文字上面的一些讲解呢，或许不是最好的方式来，怎么讲呢？就是我先说一部分，然后可能大家看一段视频，这样子可能有一些整体有一些把握，有一些概念吧。对，因为玄奘大师。这部《大唐西域记》里面呢讲的内容呢，比较详细，然后可能有一些讲法跟其他的一些讲法稍有一些差别。那种，因为菩提树的和金刚座呢，就是诸圣地当中的重中之重，所以就是这部分的一些介绍应该多少更了解好一些。玄奘大师当然讲的时候，从开始，从一路就是讲到，就是在正觉山附近的迦叶城，从这开始基本上，迦叶城说这个界限伽蓝悉喃行四无事力度涅槃长河至迦叶城，圣贤故身，少居人。为婆罗门有千余家，大千人之营，坐营也，所坐不成，众显尊敬。所以基本上，城北二三十里余里有清泉，印度相传谓之圣水。所以基本上就在讲那个附近，现在还没有直接讲到那个菩提树和金刚座的地方哦。就是说从之前我们说过，这戒仙寺院从那边呢，向西南方向走五十余里，渡过泥莲长河到迦叶城。然后这个城池呢非常的坚固，居民很少，现在居民比较多吧那边，因为旅游业现在就是各种朝圣就很发达，也不是很发达，但是比较热闹，比较人比较多。有一千余家婆罗门，都是就是迁入的后裔，原来不是本地人。光，那就是把他们不当做是臣民吧，因为是后面迁居的人，不是有些可能就是不是要一直在那边世代相聚的那种。众人也都很尊敬他们，城北三十里。那个地方呢，有个清泉，印度相传是圣水。凡是喝了这个泉水，能够洗，就洗，得到洗涤，能够 罪恶有所减轻，这样的意思，罪恶能够消除。然后从迦叶城向西南走5-6公里，到达迦叶山。这个迦叶山据说有两个，因为一个是讲的是那个灵鹫山那边的一个迦叶山，好像就搁现在有那个灵鹫山的旁边嘛。另外一个就是说在迦叶城的附近，这里其实没有做很细致的了解，但是说当时有这么一个地方，山中溪谷，幽深，风岩险峻。印度各国呢，就是各个地方的人习惯称此山为灵山。自古以来，有一些君王呢，就是会登到这个山上，就是在他们加冕之前呢，就登上王位的时候呢，就是为了化教，教化中，就是他作为国王的话，教化达于原位，恩德超越前代。无不登此山，就是他们都为了更好的做一个国王呢，就是都来登这座山灵山来做一些就是仪式，做一些活动，然后也就宣告，就是一种继位的一种就是完成吧，成功。山顶上面有座石塔，高100多余。池是无忧王所建，阿育王所建的一个100多尺的一个塔。冥冥中有灵异存在，常有圣光照耀，就是说这个地方也有一些奇特的一些现象出现。从前就是说如来佛祖佛释迦牟尼佛呢，曾经在这里讲说这个宝云经。就是这么一个地方。迦叶山东南有座塔，山的这个东南方向也有一座塔，是迦瑟出生的地方。然后这座塔前面有两座塔，迦叶迦波迦斯波和奈迪迦斯波，就是他们两兄弟吧，就是这个在这里火势，是火，就是说就是写了三个塔，在这里描述了有三个塔，顶上一个，山下两个，顶上的这个塔呢，就是有这个纪念佛陀在这里讲法，下面两个塔即是那个纪念迦瑟兄弟，这么样的一个事情。然后从迦瑟这边，刚才佛塔这边呢，这个遗址呢向东渡过大河，然后来到就是有另外一个山，千正觉山，达波罗罗吉菩提山。然后如来勤勉修行了6年苦行，就是尼连禅河附近嘛，就是过了河嘛。应该大河就是尼连禅河，孜孜以求，但未能成正觉。后来他放弃苦行，接受了牧羊女奉献的奶粥、米粥，或者是从东北方向而来，看到这座山，然后结束这个苦行以后呢，就是来到这个山上，应该是离菩提迦也很近的那个山。很喜欢他的幽静，便想在这里就是正觉，成就正觉。他从山的东北坡登到山顶，这个时候呢就是说大地震动，就是整个山有摇晃起来，然后有些就是山居山的那些什么是就是土地神也好，某一些这些山神呢，对释迦牟尼佛还没有成佛的时候，成菩萨，就是对菩萨来讲，对他说，这个山呢不是成正觉的福地，如果在这里入金刚定呢，会 震塌这个就是说地会震的塌陷下去，所以山也会就是有那种怎么讲呢，就是崩塌的意思吧，有这些，所以他鼓励就是说若至于此，入金刚顶，地当震陷，山也倾覆。所以他这样讲。然后悉达多太子呢就是说离开了这个从西南的这个西南面呢就下山，就是下到半山腰停留下来以后，就背靠山岩，面对山间有一个石洞岩窟石窟，那悉达多太子就走进去这个岩窟然后盘腿打坐。这个时候大地又一次震动，震动以后所以又就动得比较厉害，然后这时候禁区天的一些天人呢又就是向他说，那禁区天的话四禅的那种呢，就是第四禅的嘛，然后跟他说这里呢不是如来真正觉的地方，从这里向西南走14-15里的地方呢，就是离你修苦行的地方不远，有一棵树啊，菠萝树，这个后来称菩提树，树下有金刚座，就是过去和未来诸佛都在这个地方呢，就是证得正觉，所以你还是去那边，就是成就吧，这样的意思。所以菩萨刚要站起来的时候呢，石窟里面有就是另外的就是龙对他说，这个石窟非常清净的好地方，是非常清净的好地方，可以证得圣果，请您就是发慈悲心，不要遗弃我们了。他们都很，那些有些龙族他们是很希望我在那边就成就。那菩萨知道这里不是我成就正觉的地方，为了不让龙失望呢，于是就是他留下身影离去，就之前说我们佛印洞窟里面的身影一样，也是给一个龙留下的身影嘛。然后说这个也是说特定的时候呢，就过去的时候呢，这个银在昔日呢就是咸鱼咸毒，就是没不论是好的人普通的人就是看起来都能够容易看到，后来呢就是慢慢的时候就只有一些人可以看到这个里面的景象，就是佛留下来的这个洞窟里面的这个影像。所以这跟前面我们说的那个比较有相应的地方，但是这两个地理地方呢，地理距离挺远的，一个是在中印度，一个是在北印度。天神们呢在前面引导菩萨呢，就是悉达多太子呢，就是前往菩提树前。所以说这个只是后来讲到说这个故事是这样发生的。然后到了无忧王国王的时候呢，他在这个悉达多太子上山下山经过的地方都树立了标记，建了塔。这些塔呢虽然大小不同，但就是都有特别的就是怎么讲加持和出现一些特别的现象，就吉祥的一些现象。说这个有什么样的现象呢，就是说或是空中落花如雨，然后或是神光照耀幽谷，就这种的现象，或化于空中，或光照幽谷。每年呢按聚日结束以后呢，就是各地的就结下安居，这个结束以后呢，各地的僧人和俗人呢都朝拜这个山呢，供养，去朝拜和供养，并在那里过一夜才回去。所以这个传统其实现在几乎好像没有看到有这个事情。而且这里说的前正觉山，就是在佛正觉以前呢，就是来到这个山上打坐的这么一个地方呢，确定的说是哪一座山， 应该好像没有听别人就是考察或者是之类的。嗯，可能有，但是也没有仔细寻找这方面的资讯。嗯，但是根据这个记载的话，迦叶城呢，然后到往那个菩提迦叶方向走，过了尼连禅河那样的话，那边应该是还是就是你可以有判断的方向，比较这么一个情况。就是一般有些人可能听说了佛，直接在这个菩提树下成就，但是也许没有那么多人听说佛在菩提树前和苦修之后去的地方，然后也发生就是土地神、山神，和净居天的天神跟佛有沟通啊，就是这样的一些现象。然后后来在这边，阿育王就是在他这个前前后后，上去的、下来的地方呢，都给予这个，就建造一些塔呀，所以也有特定的一些，神像，是吧？就是这也说明这一件事情，政务是很了不起的一件事情。然后光是自然界的说有这个。六种振动啊，就是说向四个方向里外这样振动，就是有特别的寓意和吉祥的意思。然后，就是说是过去、未来，就是现界千佛成佛的地方呢，这个地方就很特别嘛，就这种。然后再。过去就是到菩提迦叶的，就正午的地方，前正觉山西南行14.5里至菩提树，周院叠砖，冲峻险固，东西长南北窄，南北狭，周500余步，奇树名花，连云。接引，细沙一草弥漫原背。正门东辟，对尼连禅河，就是东的方向是尼连禅河。这个在大家 Google 上面能看到，就是东方的方向就是尼连禅河。南接大花池，西阿险固，北门北通大切兰，就是现在的那个马哈布地。那个大寺，现在就是他们管理的那个在那边吗？或者是平时就是灌顶传法的时候，那个大寺旁边有，就南街毛呢，就是南街扎仓，南街寺，和尊者住的地方，就是现在这个地方，就是北的地方，靠北的那个菩提树和金刚座的北面，那西的。南接大花池就是南的这个花池，现在基本上，南的话，现在好像就是那边是一些那个，就印度当地人在那边的一些普通的街市，但是那些地方几乎朝圣者很少去那些街市，因为大家需要的东西很不一样，就本地人住的地方。再往下。那循着那个南的往下南路吧，就是往下走的时候，好像很快就走到一些比较偏僻荒凉的那种，不是荒凉吧，就是很多垃圾啊这样的地方。现在，然后西边的话，现在就是那边有一个泰国的寺庙，比较大的早期的建的一个寺庙。所以这个地方的介绍的时候，是从菩提树的外围上面先讲到这个寺面的一个景致方向。然后先从这个围墙啊什么，然后说这个很多的奇树名花、奇异草，然后正门、南门，然后西边的这边就是没有开门，你需要从北面或者南门去了以后绕到西边去，西边那边没有门没有开，基本上就是这么一个地方。悲痛大寺庙，围墙 那圣迹比比皆是，那就是菩提树和正觉塔里面的，还有一些各种塔和这个，或是塔或是金舍，都是南瞻部洲各国王、各国君王、大臣、豪族出于对佛教的佛的这种教法的敬奉、恭敬的心而建造的这么一个。然后金刚座菩提树园正中有金刚座，细仙界除尘与大师与大地聚起，所以这个地方讲了一个缘起，就是金刚座这个地方是很特别的意思。所以也说到说菩提树围墙内正中心就是金刚座。那从以前的话，过去仙界，因为我们说地水火风这样形成的时候，地球就是形成的刚刚开始形成的时候，那风轮、水轮、金轮，然后这个意思吧，就是说逐渐的在这个之上呢，就是由这个种种的土那个湖啊、什么山啊这些逐渐的形成，成为地轮，在这个地方。说形成的时候呢，位于三千大千世界的中心，下到金轮，上达地面，都是金刚构成，方圆100多步，仙界中有1000个佛，都是从这里就是入定成佛的，因此被称为金刚座。所以这个地方的地质好像说的意思是很特别的意思，就是地质上面是最初在这个地球形成的时候吧，应该说，但是就是我们在这里讲的是更比较复杂的一个概念，但是说如果说其中早先最初形成的时候，这个就是一个中心，就是三千大千世界形成的时候，这是一个中心这样的。那在这个里面呢，应该说如果地球形成的时候，当然地水火风这样的时候，这里就是很重要的圣地，因为仙界千佛在这成佛，所以被称为金刚，而且说是这个构造上面也是比较特别的，是说都是金刚构成的，所以就是跟这里有特定的关系。所以因为这个是就是正佛成佛的地方嘛，所以就是佛教的著名的这个道场啊，就是佛成佛的时候大地震动，这里只有这里呢就是最中心点嘛，就是说因为没有这个一点的动静，就是说这个地方呢周围都有六种震动，它处于最中心，所以算是一个就是静的点，这样的意思。如来将要正觉的时候，就是走遍四周，每当他打听，就是到达一个地方打坐的时候呢，大地开始就是震动，后来他就来到这里，就是这个地方呢，就是安然无事。自从进入末劫以来，佛法日益衰微，金刚座也渐渐被沙土覆没，就是覆盖了，再也就是看不见。佛涅槃后，各国君王依据传说呢，就是金刚座的这个大小，以两尊向东而坐的观自在菩萨标明，就是它大概的位置，可能那个金刚座那个塔呀这些后来建起来的嘛，因为佛陀时代的时候并没有建那么一个大的那个就是金刚座，那个地方叫金刚座，但是没有那个金刚座的那个塔，所以说那观世音菩萨表明金刚座的南北南界北界，听老人们说，就一旦这两尊佛像菩萨像啊，就是一尊是 观世音菩萨的像，对，两尊都是观世音菩萨，所以说以南北为界，各个又在这个方向呢，就是在金刚座的两边呢，就有都有各有一座观世音菩萨。听老人们就说，一旦观世音菩萨被沙土淹没的时候，佛法就灭亡了。就玄奘大师在的时候说，这个南面的菩萨已经被沙土没过了胸部，所以这个圣迹就是金刚座的一个比喻，跟就是特定的因缘有关联的，然后也有佛法的这个开始传播到周边被沙土掩埋以后呢，就是逐渐衰微的这样的一个象征，就是这样的一个缘起。就讲到这些部分内容。菩提树及其事迹这个部分。金刚座上部菩提树者，即毗婆罗之树也。西佛在世高数百尺，绿金残发，由高四五丈，佛坐其下，称正等觉。所以这里开始讲这个菩提树本身的那个部分。所以金刚座上的这个菩提树，就是毗婆罗树。然后从前佛在世的时候呢，就是树高几百尺，几百尺的话大概就是百米左右的意思。经过多次砍伐以后，还有就玄奘大师去的时候大概有四五丈，一丈三尺的话，三四十二，十二米，十五米左右，可能现在差不多，跟现在的有一点，比现在高一点嘛。因为佛坐在他下面觉悟成佛，因此树被称为菩提树。所以以前那个树就是毗婆罗树，然后后来佛成佛以后叫菩提树。树干呈黄色黄白色，枝叶青翠，冬夏都不凋落。对，确实是这样子。颜色还有这个颜色呢，光泽没有一点变化。每年就每到如来涅槃的那一天，树叶全部凋落，片刻之后又恢复如初，对，比较特别的。这一天，各国君王从四面八方，的来就赶来，就僧人还有俗众呢，全部都就是前来，成千上万的人自发的聚集到这里，用香水，如清，就是用香水香如，但是可能那个是上一次有人说，就是如果你灌香水不知道，因为就是自然的那些，你如果灌牛奶的话需要发酵的那一种，然后灌的才对树有好处，好像是这么个意思，我问了一下，但是所以清洗灌溉这棵树，用这个香水如就是牛奶吧，并且奏音乐，献香花，点燃灯具，夜以继日，进香供养。这个跟现在一样，有时候白天晚上只要早上天还没有亮的时候，都很多人赶过去开始做佛事，一直到天黑了八九点，现在有时候九点，早上也许六点到九点之间都有，各种就是修行供养种种在里面。如来涅槃后，无忧王呢，就刚刚继位王位的时候，他还不信佛嘛，就是信奉其他的歪道，所以想要就是毁坏佛的圣迹。他呢亲自率领军队来砍伐这棵树，把树根茎枝叶砍得粉碎，就是堆到西边的几 几十步远的一个地方。然后命令霍氏婆罗门烧了，就是把这些树叶烧了以后祭祀天神，相信信天神。焰火还没有灭，在一片灰堆里面呢，突然又长出两棵树。在熊熊的火焰当中，茂密的这种树叶苍翠欲滴，就是有很新鲜的这个就长出来。但是这里有点，或许砍了一段时间以后长出来的呢，但是突然灭火，火当中出现的话，那很大的神奇。这两棵树呢，就是因此被称为灰菩提树，就是灰烬里面又长出来的菩提树，就原来的树没有灭尽，从这个灰的这个里面呢又长新长出来。吴用目睹了这个奇异的这个景象以后呢，痛改前非，用香炉灌溉剩下的残根，到天亮的时候呢，就是说在这个烧灰堆的那个把那个树菩提树砍了以后，在几十步远的地方呢就烧嘛，那边长出来两棵树嘛，就有点令他震惊。以后他把原来那个砍的那个原来的位置还是被砍得很紧，在那边又开始想要把它弄活，灌溉这个残根呢。然后说到这个天亮的时候呢，就树又长成原来的样子。吴用王见了这种奇迹，以后呢又欣慰又高兴，他亲自供养这棵菩提树，乐此不疲。然后就是连回去的这些事情很多，就常常花时间在那边。吴用王的王妃呢信外道，然后秘密派人在夜里把这棵树就是剩下的那个残根呢就砍掉。早晨的时候，吴用王前来菩提树前礼敬的时候呢，他看见就是只剩下一个就是更小的那种桩子了，就一定。吴用王心里面非常的难过，他开始就是很虔诚的倾倒去祈请了，用香炉灌溉这个树桩。然后不到一天，这棵树又开始活起来了。这国王对此非常就是惊异，身怀敬意。为了防止别人的破坏，他就是开始让人在那个菩提树的周围呢用石头垒起一道墙，墙高十几尺，十几尺的话大概几米吧，两三米可能，三米的话12尺差不多可能。就现在还在，就是玄奘大师的时候那边那个内堵墙还在。然后后来的就是近代的摄上家王，信奉外道，后来的一个王嘛，就是与玄奘大师比较近的一个大王，信奉外道，毁坏佛法，破坏寺院，砍伐菩提树。那这样子的话，那位阿育王砍了一次，他太太砍了一次，然后这个又有一个就是上家王，这个又砍。他命人一直挖到，就是地下水层，就是下面地下水的那个层次，就是挖的根很深，仍然不能，就是挖进这个菩提树的根须。于是他呢，就是下令纵火把它焚烧，再用这个甘蔗浇灌，想把它腐烂掉、泡烂，灭绝他的这个遗牙。几个月后，摩揭陀国的这个另外一个王满洲王，就是说也他是吴忧王的那个一个就是后代吧，就是后代末代子孙，听到这个消息以后非常就痛心了，感叹说智慧的太阳已经隐没了，剩下的这棵菩提树呢就现在又有遭逢这种的摧残，就是生灵还能看见什么，其他人为了纪念佛看到这棵树就很重要。然后他扑倒在地呢，就是伤心的样子，感动万物，就很感动这个天地万物。 他用几千头牛的这个奶水去灌溉这棵树，过了一夜，树又长到了一丈多高，就是几米高。这个就是这个一夜时间上面或许是这样子，但是或许是稍微慢一点，但是有一点点那种特别嘛。但是因为他是这样讲的，那可能也有可能，因为这个世界上面有很多神奇的事情发生。这个满洲王呢，恐怕以后再有人去破坏这棵树呢，就在树的这个四周呢筑起一道大概就是七八米高的一个就石墙嘛。之前呢可能遭到了一定的毁坏，所以现在菩提树隐蔽在这个石壁后面，在石壁上露出两丈多高，就是这石壁大概七八米的话，上面再有两丈高，那时候玄奘大师看到的时候可能也有一个十几米高这个树。菩提树东边呢有金舍，然后高160-170尺，160-170尺，这个很高了，大概有个100米的话，33米，那得有个50米高了，50米高，很高，这个。那有个10几层楼高那么样的。然后下面，基座每一面都有20多步宽。应该东面的话，正好菩提树的东面就是那个后来的那个塔，就是金刚做的那个塔，所以这个来源呢，这些都有讲的。大家其实从地图上面可以看到，菩提树的东面其实就是那个，就是那个塔。然后这是基座的，他说这个有基座，我看。20多步宽，用青砖垒成，上面涂着石灰，每一层佛龛里面都有金佛金像，四壁雕刻造型奇特，有的是连珠圆图图案，就是连珠的圆图，有的些是天仙图，金舍顶上安放着像金光闪闪的铜制的阿摩罗伽果，金舍，东南连着楼阁，它的东南就是连着楼阁，飞檐三层，圆柱栋梁和南门和门扇窗户都可以。都以金银雕刻装饰，非常就豪华的，镶嵌着珠玉，深邃的屋宇有三进，门外就是有三个层次，就是门可以进去吧，就是第一道门，第二道门，第三道门这样，门比较深，里面比较深。一道门，两道门，应该是，也许可以算是三道门吧。现在门外左右各有一个，就是龛石，右边供奉是观世自在菩萨的像，左边是观自在菩萨像，右边是慈氏菩萨、弥勒菩萨，都是用白银铸成的，高10几尺，几米高的一个。观世音菩萨和弥勒菩萨就是白银铸造。金舍这块地方，无忧王先建造了一块小的金舍，就是一个塔嘛。这个说是无忧王建的，但是这个确实有无忧王先建了一个小的金舍，后来有两位婆罗门又将它扩建成现在的规模。就后来有人，这个又讲了个故事，说这两个婆罗门呢，就是财主，有钱的人呢，就 怎么样做的。说开始的时候呢，这两个有个婆罗门呢，他不信佛法，供奉的是希瓦达自在天。然后他听说天神在雪山里面啊，这个希瓦是说在那个冈仁波齐那边嘛，就说，就和他的弟弟一同去求愿了。然后听这个跟天神有所沟通，就是天神说，无论什么愿望，有功德才能实现，不是你所求到的，也不是我能给予你的，就是意思说你自己需要功德，不然的话你不能说我想求什么，我就立马就给你什么这样。那婆罗门就问说，修什么样的功德可以实现心愿呢？就天神就跟他说，菩提树，是正，就是佛正果的地方。你如果想，就是培植善根，求得好的福报，这样子呢，你立刻就回去，在菩提树那边呢修建大金舍，开凿一座这个大的这个水池，进行各种形式的一些供养，所以这样的话，你的一些心愿就能实现。婆罗门呢，接到这个天神的这个开示以后呢，或者命令，或者是这个启示以后呢，他内心当中萌发了坚定的信仰，然后来到菩提树下，他们两兄弟，哥哥呢负责修建这个金舍，然后弟弟呢负责开凿这个水池，然后周边。就是说，就是他们把这两个作为一种两兄弟各自完成的任务，作为一个周到的这个供养，然后请求心愿，后来就是逐一的实现了自己的一些愿望嘛，就是做了这个大臣啊，是做的一些弟弟，又就是得到各种各样，就是他们。做了国王的大臣，把所得到的这些俸禄啊、奖赏啊，这些又用来做，施舍。那金舍建成以后呢，他们就是招募了一些就是工匠，说想建造如来就是世尊的一个就像，所以这个部分也是跟后来的一些传说有一点的差别。有些人说是曾经见过佛陀的一个老太太。他死之前呢说，如果我死了以后就没有人认识佛陀的这个形象，所以根据他的一些讲法来建的这个佛像，有这么讲的29岁的这个成佛的那个像，但是根据玄奘大师讲的时候说是这个是在后面，甚至是在阿育王的后面，就是阿育王先建了小塔，之后在两个婆罗门建这个大塔的时候就建了这个佛像，就现在在菩提伽耶正觉塔里面的这个那一尊像啊，是就是这里有特别很明显，就是有很讲到很清楚的一些故事。经过许多岁月，岁多年月，一直都没有人敢，就是没有人就是应招说谁可以建一个就是释迦牟尼佛的佛像。很久以后有一个婆罗门呢来到这里，对大众呢说，就是他们找到一个人说，我擅长画如来的妙像。他们问他说，你就是造佛像需要什么样的一些材料，对方呢就说，只要香泥就可以了。你们把香泥放在金舍里面，然后再放一盏灯啊，准备一盏灯照亮，就是里面比较暗嘛，里面确实比较暗，现在也是这样子。我进去，现在当然都是灯嘛，有灯就不暗，但是没有灯是很暗的。我进去这个金舍以后呢，你们就把门关好，然后六个月以后的再把门打开。就这个人是，据说是这样说的。当时僧人们便按他的这个吩咐做了，然后还剩下4天的时候，满六个月啊，大家都觉得很奇怪，就是。可能没有到完全到六个月嘛，就是六个月以后打开，他们还差4天的时候门就被他们打开了，那就开了门说这个好像想去看一下，然后 这时候呢，看到金舍里面已经有一尊佛像，家父坐右足在上面，左手提起，怎么样拨，就是有这个一般的那种的像，右手下垂，就是那种触地印。有一手左手持钵，右手触地，就这种向东而坐，就是面向东边，栩栩如生，高4尺2寸，1米多一点嘛，就现在这个确实宽，宽1丈2尺，这样的话大概5米左右吧。要2尺的话不没有5米，就是4米多一点吧，3米多一点。2尺3尺的话才1米，1丈3尺，1丈3米，3米哦，宽1丈3米多，哦，对对对，明白了，他这个胎子一起可能，1丈2尺5寸，向高1丈，3米1尺多一点，就是向高这么多，这样。向高1丈1尺5寸，两膝相距8尺8寸，两肩宽6尺2寸，32相80虽好，全部具足。慈祥宽容的，容颜非常逼真，只有右乳还没有，就是涂好装饰，就是他们是提前了几天打开了。金舍中一个人影都没有，众人这才知道说是这个，就是特定的一个视线，大家都感叹不已，急着想知道这个是究竟是怎么回事。有一位沙门呢，心地淳朴。他梦见这个婆罗门告诉他，就说其实他是弥勒菩萨，就是我怕工匠呢想象不出来佛的这个圣容，因此呢就是亲自莅临，然后来就塑了这个画，塑了这个像了。右手下垂是因为如来就是要成佛的时候呢，天魔来干扰的时候，就地神向如来报告说，就是天魔来到，其中一个地神呢，先就是出来以后祝佛降魔。如来告诉这个说，你不必害怕，就是到那时候有一点，就其他可能徒弟那些有一些害怕了。我以人力一定可以降服他。魔王说，谁来作证？然后你已经功德圆满，谁来作证？这个时候就是安人这些种种的功德。如来就是用右手垂地啊，就是说，这些来可以作证嘛，大地作证，或者地的这些神灵呢，就是地土地神种种的这些能够作证。这里有人，这是第二地神就跳出来作证，所以。然后现起来就是作证，所以现在这尊佛像的手仿照那个时候的样子下垂。众人知道这个神灵的这个原委啊，就是显现这个弥勒菩萨以及造佛像的，然后每个人都很感动。然后在没有完成的这个佛像的这个这个上面呢，就工匠他千方百计的镶嵌了各种各样的宝珠。就是说珍宝，并给戴上璎珞宝冠，用奇珍异宝交相装饰。所以说在到后来的时候，像刚才那个毁坏菩提树的那一个人呢，他也想有一点想要毁坏，就是摄伤家王，他本来想有一点破坏这个菩提树，然后但是目睹了就是佛的这个尊容，心里面呢就非常的不安了，然后就准备回 就是驾回宫，就准备回去。这个时候他自己不敢弄，但是他命令他的这个宰相来说，你要把这棵树，这个佛像给我，就是除掉，这样的意思。那这个宰相呢，他说这个除掉以后放一尊大自在像，因为他们是信奉大自在天的，就是放一尊大自在天的像。那宰相呢，就可能有一点就害怕，说一方面是受这个王的这个命令，那不做又不行，然后回佛像的话又自己觉得永世会遭殃，然后违抗命令呢又会就是自己会丧命了，或者灭族。那这样的情况下，进退两难的时候呢，他想了一个办法。他就说召集有信佛的人，在佛像和前面呢就垒了一堵砖墙，然后在这个砖墙前面呢就再弄一个画一个大自在天的像在这个砖墙上面，因为里面比较暗嘛，就是说，然后砖墙后面呢放了一盏灯，然后可能就是比较看不太清楚，对佛像的。就感觉到和全部黑了，全部被墙堵住，又心里觉得很惭愧，所以在佛像前呢点了一盏灯，然后前面画大自在像。这个完成以后呢，他去向国王报告说，就是国王听了以后，就自己心里面还是有点害怕，要做这样做，但是全身起这个脓包，这国王皮肤开始就是皮开肉绽，就是是吧？肉绽是吧？那种的，然后，就反正就是皮肤的这些问题开始一下子出现了，就不久就死了。然后这个王死了以后呢，宰相又很快的回到这个金舍以后，拆掉了原来的那个就是那一堵墙嘛。虽然过了很多天，但是这个灯还是没有熄灭，所以这一个，就是一些特异的一些景象这样子，所以佛像也没有遭到任何损坏啊。对，所以因为佛像在这个深邃幽暗的房间里面呢，灯火不是，如果灯火不断的要就是前面供灯啊香啊，才可以看到那个佛的这种慈容。所以在最好的方式就是说清晨的时候呢，拿一面大镜子反光在这个就是这个深的这个洞里面，也不是洞吧，就是殿里面，然后用这个光来照到那个佛的脸，就看得更清楚。一般的点一盏小的灯的话，看不是太清楚，就是这么一个情况。就说的，我看现在时间差不多。那就放一下那个影片。就今天本人说的意思是什么呢？就是说，就那时候有很细致的一些记载说明，所以这个还是就作为佛弟子了解一下。金刚做的这个外文面。就是菩提迦叶城，然后菩提迦叶和城和菩提迦叶山，有讲到菩提迦叶，就是迦叶城、迦叶山都还没有到菩提迦叶嘛，就再到菩提迦叶。到了菩提迦叶以后，这个金刚坐的这个情况，然后周边那个围墙和四面的情况，然后这个菩提树。他的一些缘由历史经历了什么？然后这个金刚坐佛陀开悟的地方的这个菩提树的东方那边建这个金刚座的一个缘起嘛，就是开始是阿育王建的，后来是两位婆罗门受到大自在天的这个启示来建，然后又遇到一些特别的，然后就高低啊，就是尺寸啊这些上面都讲了，这好像后来。基多王朝那边的时候，他们就是根据这个大塔，好像之后又回过吧，就是又他们又仿照他们有以前的那个木质的那个 就是样品嘛，就大概的一些样子，是过去有就是小微型的那些，像大的飞机有微型的飞机来模型嘛，就有那个模型，木头的模型，这个木头模型现在还有，有一些传下来的，所以根据那个又重新就是造的，有吗？18多少年看到的时候好像也是毁的，已经就是不成样子了，有点，但是后来又重新弄了。所以就是讲到树经历了很多这些毁坏又如何恢复的，然后就是这个圣像不论是不是佛陀时代的加持物，但是至少也是讲到弥勒菩萨显现以后以种种神奇的方式，就是出现这一尊像的这么一个传说，在玄奘大师里面，这个比较怎么讲，其他地方不容易听到的一个就是1000多年前他们是这么样就解释的。你们看手机横过来可能不会看到，是看手机的。
Every year, Buddhist pilgrims from around the world come to Bodh Gaya to pay homage to the Buddha. This sacred place is believed to be the center of the universe, the navel of the earth.Where Buddhas, past and future, attain complete enlightenment. India, an ancient land, has produced many diverse religions and cultures over the course of her extensive history. Today, the majority of people in India subscribe to one religious belief or another.Buddhism, considered one of the world's great religions, originated from India. It is not surprising, then, that India commands a special place in the hearts of Buddhists. Buddhists come to India to retrace the steps of the founder of Buddhism, commemorate his achievements, and celebrate the venerated representation of enlightenment, the Buddha.The founder of Buddhism, Siddhartha Gautama, was born in 623 BC in the kingdom of Kapilavastu in ancient India, in what is today Nepal. To commemorate his joyous birth, his father, King Suddhodana, invited many renowned sages to a naming ceremony for his son. Among them was an old sage who prophesied that the young prince,would eventually give up his kingdom to become an ascetic and ultimately a fully enlightened Buddha. As Prince Siddhartha was growing up, King Suddhodana recruited the best teachers in the kingdom to educate him. He was very diligent in his learning and became a talented young man renowned for his wit and courage. The prince grew into a gentleman and was full of love, kindness and compassion for all people.And living creatures. Meanwhile, his father, the king, was deeply anxious about the prophecy of his son's renouncing the kingdom. So he lavished him with all manner of wealth and luxuries, hoping this would distract him from any thoughts of renunciation. But on one of his outings beyond the palace walls, Prince Siddhartha witnessed for the very first time old age, sickness, and death.And the peaceful countenance of an ascetic. What he saw weighed heavily on him and made him deeply contemplative. Siddhartha was 29 when he renounced his kingdom and left his wife and son in search of the truth. He spent the next 6 years practicing austerities, but when this failed to yield the answers he sought, he gave up the practice of austerities.After accepting a bowl of rice milk from a village girl named Sujata, who nursed him back to health, he made his way to Gaya. Upon arrival, a grass cutter offered him a pile of kusha grass for a cushion. He then sat under a ficus religiosa tree in Bodh Gaya for 49 days, contemplating deeply about life and trying to find an end to cyclic existence. Finally, on a full moon night, Siddhartha gained complete realization and became a fully enlightened Buddha. Henceforth, the ficus religiosa became known as the Bodhi tree. Bodhi refers to awakening, and thus the place associated with Buddha's awakening became known as Bodh Gaya, also known as Buddha Gaya. Bodh Gaya is situated around 150 kilometers south of the city of Patna. During Vesak Day, which falls every year on the full moon day of May, devout Buddhists make their way to Bodh Gaya to commemorate the birth, enlightenment, and parinirvana of the Buddha. The arid summer month of May attracts many devotees from tropical countries like Thailand, Sri Lanka, and Vietnam. Bodh Gaya is considered the holiest of the holy sites because it is here where past and future Buddhas are believed to attain enlightenment. It is said that a total of 1,000 Buddhas will attain realization and enlightenment in this one place.
In our literature, Buddhist literature, it says all the past Buddhas, they all come to for their final bliss or to attainment of enlightening. They come to Bodh Gaya, especially. Past Buddhas, and also in the future Buddhas, they also, in their term, when they about to become enlightenment, so they are coming to Bodh Gaya.
Every year, the management committee of Bodh Gaya hosts a grand celebration, inviting the Sangha and local officials to come together to commemorate Vesak. On the full moon night, the temple organizes cultural performances and invites various groups to put up Buddhist-related performances. Devotees celebrate Vesak in their own ways. Some offer lamps and pray for wisdom and liberation from suffering. Others pay homage to the Buddha in groups and chant the scriptures in praise of the triple gems, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. On this night, devotees immerse themselves thoroughly in Buddhism, as if they were living in the time of the Buddha himself. The month of May is hot and humid, so Buddhists from other parts of the world prefer to visit Bodh Gaya at the end of the year, when the weather is cooler. There are even direct flights offered at this time of the year, so travel becomes more expedient and convenient. One common sight in Bodh Gaya during this season are maroon-robed monks called lamas. Many of them come from around India or neighboring Nepal and Bhutan. Most of them come to Bodh Gaya to participate in the Monlam, or Great Prayer Festival. The Monlam, or Great Prayer Festival, is organized primarily to pray for happiness, peace, and good health. It also serves to commemorate Lord Buddha. The Monlam was started by Lama Tsongkhapa, founder of the Gelugpa sect of Tibetan Buddhism in 1409. The inaugural Great Prayer Festival was held in the Jokhang Temple in Lhasa. The Kagyu sect of Tibetan Buddhism also organizes the Monlam in Bodh Gaya every year. According to estimates, close to 10,000 Sangha members and lay devotees participate in the Monlam every year. The first Karmapa, the head of the Kagyu sect, was credited with establishing the unique system of reincarnated lamas in Tibet. To date, the current Karmapa is the 17th in the successive line of incarnations. The Karmapa stressed that the aims and benefits of Monlam are not restricted to one religion, but universal and directed towards all sentient beings.
네게 지다 상기 준비된데 미시 나로리아 삼든 주시 세난다도 간다지 주의에만 진제기 사자디 모두가의 차디가 아래 상기 양연의 대배 월이냐 다 아지 낸 지 담배 취해 냠린 생기에 진제기 가사 진제기 모두가의 친지 냠린 체비미나 뒤지 파지에다 개인 파지에 뇽아 다 간다 주변 간 주구역이 냐면 담지 아니 휴지 주가지 용구역 상계 소요하다 근데 인류 산에 아니 원천 땜배 남다락도 하는 시비미냐 지 주의 연말의 지파 아니 보다가 차리 아니 진주 뉴세 냐면 채색이 사세냐 야수에디 보다가 차리 아니 근데 인류 산에 인류세기
The Karmapa advised everyone at the Monlam to cherish the opportunity to make positive aspirations and practice hard in order to purify all negative karma and accumulate positive merits. The Karmapa also emphasized that the ideal place to accumulate merits is in front of the Vajra seat in Bodh Gaya. One's body and speech act as a support to cultivate positive mental habits, as well as sow the seeds of merit, so they are extremely beneficial for one's cultivation. The Karmapa also said, Now that we've obtained the precious human rebirth, come in contact with the Buddha Dharma and come to such a sacred place. We should cherish it and contemplate on it. We should treasure the teachings and bear them in mind so we do not waste this good fortune and opportunity. The Kagyu Monlam consists of many activities, one of which is led by the Karmapa and involves hundreds of lamas carrying the scriptures and circumambulating the stupa. While doing so, the Karmapa, as well as all the Rinpoches and lamas, don their golden robes and hats as a sign of respect to the Dharma. The ceremony also involves the offering of alms, with the public offering food to the Sangha. The Tibetans believe the offering of alms follows a tradition set by the Buddha. When the end of the year approaches and the weather turns colder and more comfortable, many lamas begin doing full prostrations at the holy site. Many devotees follow their example while paying homage to the Buddha. Doing prostrations is the primary means of showing repentance. It is an expression of respect, as well as a way to eliminate one's pride and ego. During prostration, one lowers one's head to the ground and as a result elevates the object of veneration to a higher place. This helps to purify the negative karma associated with pride. While doing prostrations, one should stay concentrated and focused in order to achieve the intended results. Some Buddhists prefer to do the three steps one bow, which in terms of significance is similar to the full prostration. The aim is to transform one's ego clinging to loving kindness and compassion. Buddhist practitioners often like to face the Buddha statue while chanting the scriptures, as this is akin to hearing the Dharma from the Buddha's own mouth. This helps to remind oneself to practice diligently, avoid evil, and do good. Scripture chanting originated in the time of Shakyamuni Buddha. In the past, the words of the Buddha were passed via oral transmission. Disciples of the Buddha often memorized and repeated the words of the Buddha when they preached the Dharma. This involved familiarizing oneself with a particular scripture and making the effort to commit it to memory. This continues today, with the chanting of scriptures still the basic tool of learning and spreading the Dharma. Other devotees prefer to engage in silent meditation, either beneath the Bodhi tree or in front of the Vajra seat. Settling into a state of deep peace and serenity, they follow in the Buddha's footsteps and embark on the path to enlightenment. Here, Buddhists usually perform certain rites and rituals to show their respect to the Buddha, such as the offering of water, flowers, fruits, incense, and lamps. Robes are also offered to the statue of the Buddha installed here. And on auspicious days and during special events, the same statue is painted gold. Every ethnic group has its own customs and traditions. People who come from different countries naturally subscribe to their respective cultures and traditions when they pay their respects to holy objects. This elderly couple from Sri Lanka pay their respects to the Buddha by hanging up a small white cloth beneath the Bodhi tree.
Now we will go there and tie this. We tie it here, through which, through the power of Lord Buddha, both Dhamma and Sangha, we expect all bad omens and bad things will be erased off, and through the power of Lord Buddha, all good things will happen to him and to his family. It is a tradition in Sri Lanka that when people grow old, their children spend for them to go to these holy places. It may be inside the country or outside the country even.
Sri Lanka is not a rich country, you know. Even though the village people is a wonderful. The village people, they collect money. They collect money doing small things, doing small business, you know, cooking, you know, weaving. Maybe for 5 years, for 10 years. Why? To one day I want to go and visit Bodh Gaya.
They come from Vietnam and have a special way of expressing their veneration for the Buddha. The monks will cut a tuft of hair from the devotee and scatter it upon the soil of Bodh Gaya.
We are shave our hair so that we become the tribes of the Buddha. You get the health, strong, happiness, poverty, all sorrow, envy will be true. And when I have my hair, I will spare it in this land. Every people come here and step to my hair. It means that I bring peace to all the people and poverty and happiness, all the things.
These Chinese are part of a group from Myanmar. They've made the trip specially to Bodh Gaya and have taken refuge in the Triple Gem. They chant the scriptures, meditate, and engage in activities to express their gratitude to the Buddha. Steve from Switzerland often comes to Bodh Gaya on a pilgrimage with his family. He feels that being here in person helps to strengthen his Buddhist faith.
Just looking at pictures or even looking at this DVD, well, it gives you some inspiration. But being here, only touching the ground here, only actually breathing the air which Buddha was breathing, seeing the environment here, that is really a blessing for your body, speech and mind.
It isn't only Buddhists who come to Bodh Gaya. Devotees of other religions also make pilgrimages here.
The Hindu people believe Buddha as the god or the incarnation of the Vishnu god, you know. So they believe and they have this faith. So that's why wherever Buddha statue, Hindu people go definitely. They go and pay respect as their god. Thus, so many Hindu people each year come to pay respect to this place.
Like today's pilgrims, Buddhists of the distant past also came to India from faraway places, the most famous being Master Xuanzang, who hailed from the China of the Tang Dynasty. He was not only renowned worldwide as an outstanding translator of Buddhist scriptures, but he was also one of the greatest adventurers of ancient China. His journey to the west from China to India, on a quest to collect and collate the scriptures, spanned 50,000 miles and 17 years. He also devoted his life to translating a total of 1,335 scrolls of Buddhist scriptures. Master Xuanzang also spent a year recording his experiences in what is now known as the Great Tang Records of the Western Regions. This book documents all his experiences of his more than a decade-long itinerant journey, and it remains a rich source of knowledge about the history and geography of ancient Central Asia, especially regions like Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. In 627 AD, Master Xuanzang left the Tang capital of Chang'an of modern-day Xi'an, and after overcoming all sorts of difficulties and dangers, finally arrived in northern India around the summer of 629 AD. From there, he made his way to central India, taking in the six holy sites along the way. In the Great Tang Records on the Western Regions, Master Xuanzang described witnessing the Mahabodhi Temple in Bodh Gaya at a height of approximately 170 feet. The Bodhi tree was surrounded by brick walls, and the tree was 50 feet tall. While Master Xuanzang was doing his prostrations beneath the Bodhi tree, he spontaneously burst into tears when he thought about the Buddha preaching the Dharma while he was alive, and how he did not have the good fortune of seeing and hearing the Buddha himself. Following that, Master Xuanzang went to the most renowned Buddhist institute in India, Nalanda University, to learn the Dharma. The reason why a temple was constructed in Bodh Gaya is to commemorate the Bodhi tree and the fact that the Buddha practiced and gained enlightenment here. The earliest shrine was constructed by the Buddhist king Asoka back in 3 BC. Later kings raised the shrine by another 50 meters by building the magnificent Mahabodhi temple over it. Some scholars estimated this to be around 2 AD. Later kings and influential pilgrims from India, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar also pitched in with reconstruction, repair, and expansion works on the temple. In the 12th century, Turkic or Mughal invaders destroyed the temple, and Buddhism fell into decline. In 1590, a Shiva devotee came to the surrounding areas of Bodh Gaya and established his own sect and temple here. His followers gradually took control of the Mahabodhi temple, but they did not take good care of it, letting it fall into disrepair, and it succumbed to the ravages of nature. In 1861, the English archaeologist Alexander Cunningham visited the area and implored the local authorities to excavate and restore the temple. Only in 1887 did serious reconstruction work really commence. He wrote in his diary, "The excavation works were really monotonous. Every night before I slept, I used to read the Great Tang Records on the Western Regions, where Master Xuanzang described in great detail the famous Bodhi tree and its surrounding Buddha statues and temple grounds. Very soon, we found a large number of relics which bore close resemblance to the descriptions in the book." Cunningham followed the descriptions of Master Xuanzang closely in the reconstruction of the temple. Even information on the decorative motifs and construction materials came from the Great Tang Records on the Western Regions. The current resplendent Vajra seat beneath the Bodhi tree used to be a slab of red sandstone, measuring 2.4 meters in length, 1.4 meters width, and 90 centimeters in height. And it was excavated from Mahabodhi Temple by Cunningham, but it was broken in many places. According to the excavation records, the Vajra seat was constructed by King Asoka and placed in its current position by Cunningham after the excavation. There is a Buddha statue in the main shrine, positioned here by Cunningham. It was then greenish-black in color, but over the years, Tibetan pilgrims practicing of pasting gold foil on it transformed it into the golden statue we see today. The Mahabodhi Temple in Bodh Gaya was named a World Heritage Site by UNESCO in 2002. The Mahabodhi Temple is shaped like a pyramid. The first level is a square, with each side measuring 15 meters in length, and it spirals upwards into a bronze spire, giving the stupa a harmonious sense of balance. At each of the four corners of the first level sits a similarly shaped but smaller stupa. There is a stone plaque in front of the main entrance towards the east. On both sides of the main entrance, one can find niches filled with gold-plated Buddha statues. The relief sculptures on the four sides of the stupa are framed by horseshoe-shaped arch doors, representing the earlier Buddhist monasteries. The other three sides of the Mahabodhi Temple contain over 60 stone railings, measuring 2 meters high. These were made between the 2nd and 5th century. Most of the current stone railings are replicas, since the original ones have been installed in various museums as exhibits. Towards the left of the path leading to the temple, one can find a round stone seat with the Buddha's footprint carved on it. Besides that, at the Vajra seat and railings around the Bodhi tree, one can also find two round black stone seats with gigantic Buddha footprints carved on them. This elaborate piece of art never fails to kindle one's imagination. After the Buddha attained enlightenment, he remained beneath the Bodhi tree and meditated on the Vajra seat for 7 days. On the second week, the Buddha stood atop a small hill and gazed uninterrupted at the Bodhi tree, full of gratitude for the shade it had provided him throughout his days of meditation. On the third week, the Buddha did walking meditation at the north face of the Mahabodhi Temple. Currently, there is a long platform erected here, and there are lotus flower stone sculptures on the platform, symbolizing lotus flowers blooming beneath the feet of Buddha wherever he walked. Walking meditation, which originated from the practice of Theravada Buddhism, has become an important part of modern-day meditation. Walking meditation consists of focusing pointedly on every single action of the body while one is engaged in the act of walking. One is aware but unfettered by discursive thoughts in the mind and external distractions. Through the practice of determination, one maintains a balanced and patient mind. On the fourth week, the Buddha engaged in the practice of meditation here, contemplating on the law of cause and effect, where every phenomenon arises as a result of prior causes and conditions. Today, this place has become a highly treasured practice ground where ordained and lay Tibetan Buddhists engage with utmost devotion in the practice of full-length prostrations, in the pursuit of full enlightenment. On the fifth week after the Buddha's enlightenment, he sat down to meditate beneath a poplar tree, and it was here where he advised a Brahmin, "It is not through birth, but through actions that one is considered a Brahmin." This place is currently located along the main route towards the main shrine in the Mahabodhi Temple. On the sixth week of the Buddha's enlightenment, he entered into deep concentration in this very place, and just then, a raging storm beckoned, and the Naga King appeared and provided the Buddha with shelter against the relentless storm. This place is actually symbolic because, according to records, the actual location where this took place is 3 kilometers south of the lotus pond. On the seventh week, the Buddha sat here in meditation, and upon completion, he received offerings of biscuits and honey from 2 merchants who took refuge in him. They became the earliest lay followers of the Buddha, even before the official Sangha was established. The Buddha attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, which is why it commands such a sacred place in the hearts of Buddhists. Some people who aspire to be a monastic have, after careful consideration, specially chosen to be ordained in this special place. The current tree is actually a sapling transplanted from the original Bodhi tree. In 3rd BC, King Asoka gave orders for the tree to be chopped and the trunk to be burned. However, he later converted to Buddhism, and the tree was allowed to grow and flourish, to bear new sprouts and take on a new lease of life. King Asoka grew to be very pious and often paid homage to the Bodhi tree. But his wife was extremely jealous and instigated someone to cut it down. To revive the tree, King Asoka nurtured it with milk every day, and as a result, the tree started bearing new shoots. Around 6 AD, King Shashank, a follower of the Shiva sect, gave orders for the tree to be uprooted. But fortunately, its roots were intact, and a new tree sprang up yet again. The Bodhi tree not only suffered man-made destruction, but it also suffered the wrath of Mother Nature. The current Bodhi tree, the object of such veneration, is of the fifth generation. King Asoka, the king of the Maurya dynasty, loved visiting holy places associated with the Buddha, Bodh Gaya being one of them. As a Buddhist, he strongly supported the spread of Buddhism, and under his patronage, Buddhism spread throughout the whole of India. He also sent his son Mahendra, an ordained monk, to spread Buddhism in Sri Lanka. King Asoka later tasked his daughter Sangamitra, an ordained nun, and a group of specialists to bring a sapling of the Bodhi tree from Bodh Gaya to Sri Lanka, as well as spread the Bhikkhuni vows, resulting in the establishment of the first Bhikkhuni Sangha in Sri Lanka. Under royal patronage, Buddhism became Sri Lanka's main religion, and even today, the island nation is regarded as a center of Buddhism. The Bodhi tree continues to flourish today at the very same spot where it had been transplanted.
This Bodhi tree with the golden pillars, you can see the small branch. That is the actual Bodhi tree, which was planted in 288 BC. The other Bodhi trees have been planted as guardian trees. You know, when it was alone, there can be a lot of problems. So just to protect the Bodhi tree from any natural disaster or anything, so they have been planted here.
This tree has been well researched and documented as the oldest on record and is viewed as a national treasure by Sri Lankans.
The Mahavamsa, the great chronicle of Sri Lanka, is a very important historical document in Sri Lanka. It is well accepted and respected by the historians the world over. There we find the whole history of the Bodhi tree. And apart from that, we also have Bodhivamsa. Bodhivamsa is particularly written for Bodhi tree. Everything about the Bodhi tree, the arrival of the Bodhi tree, the history of the Bodhi tree, whosoever came, what are the rituals, everything is written there in Bodhivamsa.
The Bodhi tree is taken care of by a group of specialists, and it's said that some of these people are the descendants of those who centuries ago brought the Bodhi sapling over from India. The Bodhi tree is the symbol of the Buddha's enlightenment, which is why it is widely respected. Today, paying homage to the Bodhi tree has become part and parcel of the religious life of Sri Lankan Buddhists. The saplings of the Bodhi tree in Sri Lanka have been transplanted to many parts of the world, bearing testimony to the truly global spread of Buddhism. In 1891, a young Sri Lankan, Dharmapala, visited Bodhi Gaya. The Mahabodhi temple had just been restored by a British archaeologist, but a local Shiva priest by the name of Mahanta claimed possession of the temple, though he was not able to produce any form of official documentation to prove it. Back then, there was no one maintaining the temple. The whole place was filthy, overgrown with wild shrubs, and there were broken Buddha statues scattered around. Dharmapala was extremely depressed upon seeing the place in such a pathetic state. So he made a vow beneath the Bodhi tree and pledged his best to maintain and protect this holy site. With that, he started waging a campaign to regain Buddhist control of the Mahabodhi temple.
When our founder came on a pilgrimage, he found the deplorable condition of this sacred place. Then he decided to form a kind of organization which can communicate with the Buddhist world and get assistance from the Buddhist countries to save this sacred place for the Buddhist world. The other objectives is that to open some kind of charitable activities surrounding these sacred places, Buddha Gaya, Sarnath, Kushinara, such places.
In 1892, Dharmapala founded the Mahabodhi Society in Kolkata, then the capital of India. This made it more convenient to establish contact with people of authority and approach them for help. In the same year, he started publishing the first international Buddhist publication, Mahabodhi Journal, to create public awareness and seek global support. He visited Buddhist countries and traveled to the West to garner interest and support among Buddhists in his bid to regain the holy place.
He met so many the great personalities in India, like Mahatma Gandhi, and like Jawaharlal Nehru and Rabindranath Tagore and Swami Vivekananda, such as very big personalities he met, and he asked their support to save this Buddha Gaya temple especially.
Many important figures in India, such as Mahatma Gandhi, had expressed their view that Buddhists should own the rights to the Mahabodhi temple. Finally, in 1949, the Bodh Gaya Temple Act was passed, paving the way for a Bodh Gaya Temple Management Committee to be set up to manage the temple's affairs. The members comprised 4 Buddhists and 4 Hindus, including Mahanta. The chairman was to be the district magistrate of Gaya, and he had to be a Hindu. Since then, the Mahabodhi Temple has been under the jurisdiction of this committee.
Temple किसी एक व्यक्ति का नहीं होता है.
Temple is not belong to one person.
No. Temple is very world.
It belongs to world.
Even today, some Indian Buddhist monks are still hopeful that the 1949 Bodh Gaya Temple Act will be revised and that the temple will one day be wholly managed by Buddhists. Bodh Gaya is the foremost sacred place in the minds of Buddhists. A pilgrimage to India is not complete without coming to the source of Buddhism, the place where the Buddha practiced austerities, the place where he became enlightened, and the place where he preached the wheel of Dharma. Devout Buddhists around the world aspire to visit these places. Surrounding Bodh Gaya are many holy places associated with the Buddha. East of Mahabodhi Temple, beyond the bustling town, lies the Niranjan River, where the Buddha engaged in the practice of austerities. Having left the palace, he came to the forest here as Prince Siddhartha and engaged in the practice of extreme austerities, subsisting on 1 grain of rice a day. He became severely emaciated, yet for 6 years he could not find a way towards liberation. He stumbled into the river for a wash, and due to his frailty, eventually passed out and went into a coma. Just as he started examining his practice over the years, he heard a tune from afar containing these lyrics. Like the strings of the sitar, the loose ones will not produce a sound. The tight ones will break. Only those which are neither loose nor tight will produce the best music. Upon hearing these words, Prince Siddhartha finally realized that neither extreme austerities nor indulgence in pleasures could lead to one's realization. It was only through the middle way and the practice of meditation that one could attain enlightenment. So he decided to end his practice of austerities. The locals refer to the Niranjan River as the Palgu River. During drought, when the water level is low, the middle of the river is stacked with sand, resembling an open sandy desert. However, during the rainy season, it turns into an expansive river. One can imagine how magnificent the undulating river looked back then, just by looking at its banks, which stretch over 30 to 40 meters. Moving forward from the banks of the Niranjan River, one approaches the village where Sujata, the milkmaid, used to live. If Sujata did not offer Prince Siddhartha rice milk back then, he might not have had enough energy to make his way to the Bodhi tree, and Buddhism might not have existed. In order to commemorate Sujata's act of kindness, King Asoka erected an 11-meter stupa over her house. Not far from here, there is another small shrine erected by the villagers in honor of Sujata, which contains a statue of her offering the rice milk, which tourists visit to pay their respects to. Not far from the shrine sits a pavilion, and within this lies a well. This is where Buddha subdued the Kashyapa brothers. The three brothers were the followers of the fire god, and they kept a fire dragon in the dungeon. In order to convert the Kashyapa brothers, the Buddha stayed overnight in their place. During the night, the fire dragon breathed out toxic fumes to hurt the Buddha, but got subdued by him instead. The heretical Kashyapa took refuge in the Buddha and contributed greatly to the subsequent growth of Buddhism. In the vicinity lies the Mucharam village, and within it lies the Muchalinda pond, where the Naga king tried to protect the Buddha from the raging storm after his enlightenment. The place retains its original charm due to the fact that it's yet to be developed. As one ventures along this ancient trail, one can see entire green fields of kusha grass. It is anyone's guess if the soft grass offered to Prince Siddhartha back then actually originated from here. Surrounding Bodh Gaya, one can find numerous Buddhist temples and meditation centers from around the world. Each has its own unique architectural style, which gives this town a truly cosmopolitan feel. Although Buddhism originated from India, it spread to different countries and many local cultures and customs became assimilated into Buddhism. This includes not just the distinct architectural styles of temples, but also the unique craftsmanship of Buddha statues. This is of great benefit to pilgrims from different parts of the world, as they have the rare opportunity to understand and experience different Buddhist cultures and traditions in this one place. Many Buddhist centers organize regular events and ceremonies, as well as offer accommodation to provide devotees with the most favorable conditions to carry out their pilgrimages or engage in more long-term practice. Some also provide aid to the poor villages nearby. Among the oldest is the Mahabodhi Society set up by Dhammapala.
Its main project was to establish one pilgrimage center. That time there was no any place to sleep to the pilgrims. So he decided, I want to make one pilgrimage rest or dharmashala. Thus he started this building in 1901. This was the first building in Bodh Gaya that time served to all the pilgrimage who visited this place. So this was the first project in Bodh Gaya.
After the death of Dhammapala, the Mahabodhi Society continued his legacy in Bodh Gaya and other holy Buddhist sites by restoring Buddhist relics, rebuilding temples, providing pilgrims with accommodation, boosting education through building research institutes, schools, libraries, museums, and a Buddhist publishing firm. This allowed many Indians and Westerners to learn more about Buddhism. It is today the main driving force for the Buddhist revival in India. They've also set up clinics to provide villagers with medical aid and services. Shakyamuni Buddha Community Healthcare Center, established by the Root Institute, is another center which provides medical services to poor villages. The center is run by a group of specialized medical professionals and volunteers. It provides a comprehensive range of medical services, from general consultation to physical rehabilitation, tuberculosis management to the care of child AIDS patients. Every month, the medical center caters to more than 3,000 patients seeking medical advice. As a result, the center requires considerable manpower, and this has provided employment opportunities for many.
When I came here, I was only one. Now we have more than 25 professional and support staff supporting people, and they are they're getting job here. This is one of the very happiest in their lives.
Prevention is better than cure, which is why the medical center has initiated community health ambassador projects to spread the importance of healthcare and hygiene in many villages.
Well, we do work in the mobile villages, but we only go there one day a week. We need to try and get the villagers themselves or people within the villages to start recognizing their own health problems and train them up and work them towards solving their health problems. So that was one of the main aims of the community health workers.
Bodh Gaya is situated in Bihar in northern India, one of the country's poorest regions. As this is the site of Buddha's enlightenment, many Buddhists come here to accumulate merit. They emulate the Buddha's spirit of great compassion and do their part to alleviate human suffering by offering love and care to those less fortunate.
This gave the local people very good example. If the Buddhist people do this kind of the services in this area, the local people, they understand they are really doing real dedication, what Buddha always said, help the people, help who need to kind, help who need compassion, make them happy. So they give very good example, not only to going to the temple as a monk, doing some puja and this and that thing, but these kinds of services run by the Buddhist organization or Buddhist people make the people locally to inspire. They are really following the Buddha way.
Ms. Huang Mingyi, a volunteer from Taiwan, is one who has benefited from this excellent opportunity. Throughout her time at Bodh Gaya, she's made friends with many Indian children, and in the process, uncovered a priceless jewel from the depths of her heart.
我们在一般面看到的有很多很多很贫穷的人，甚至是生病的人，但是这个并不是只有看到这个表象，而我在他们身上看到自己的慈悲心，还有无量的菩提心。对，如果没有他们，我是看不到自己有这样的心意的。
The abbot of this Vietnamese temple comes from Germany. Apart from managing the temple, he makes use of his time at Bodh Gaya to deepen his own Dharma practice with fellow devotees from different parts of the world.
You can list many famous monk Dharma teaching, but after you can choose what is good for you. This is so. This practice is I like and I do. I learning from any people. But after I think back, this, if good, I learning. If no good, I throw out.
Although they barely know each other, and despite the vast differences in their cultural and educational backgrounds, they share an important similarity, a sincere wish to seek the truth. They come together from different corners of the world to Bodh Gaya, with the Buddha as the main source of inspiration. Taking him as the perfect example, with the same goal and intention in mind, they follow in the Buddha's footsteps in the pursuit of complete enlightenment.
Bodh Gaya! Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya! Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya!
Bodh Gaya! Bodh Gaya!
They come with one aim, to offer their highest respects and greatest gratitude to the Buddha. This place, where the Buddha attained enlightenment, will remain in their hearts forever. This place, called Bodh Gaya.
扎西德勒，现在基本上这个短片介绍的很好，如果以后有可能中文字幕这样的话，可能更方便其他人看。你们有个别的人有能力去做字幕的话也挺好，这个介绍其实很不错，比较全面。那我们就时间也差不多了，我就不多说。所以愿大家就是借由种种的因缘的一些鼓舞，就是专心闻思修，扎西德勒，赐福以得一切智，摧伏一切过患敌，生老病死由波涛，愿度有海出有情。扎西德勒。